They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, it's finally warm, but I don't think spring is here yet. They promised us more snow on Friday. So I think someone's playing a mean trick on us. But what's not funny is that I have a really dynamite lady on the phone with me today. Her name is Sarah Benson. She is a broker in Chicago, and she is an author, a published author. I have a book sitting right here in front of me called Escaping Condo Jail, and we're going to talk about that, along with a whole host of other wonderful things that Sarah's got in store for us. Sarah, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Sue.
So you're a broker.
That's correct, a 30-year veteran broker.
30 years, huh?
Yes, and you were a broker too.
A long time. I was a realtor. I was not. Uh-huh. I never moved on. I got into the market right as it tanked back in the 80s, mm-hmm. right? And I ended up closing down 3 brokerage firms and decided I probably shouldn't do that to the business.
Well, real estate certainly has its cycles. You
know? It goes up and it goes down. So, after I closed down a bunch of them, I thought, and some of them had been around for a long time. I decided maybe it was a good omen. 3 times, that's it. Time to go.
So, well, real estate is a fascinating subject. I mean, we all have to live somewhere, right?
That's true. And you have a very unique take on it. I mean, you've been selling real estate. You're a broker, which is not a realtor, which is the next step up. And you actually look at your job as educational.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My very first job was teaching piano. When I was a teenager, and of course that was the beginning of my role as a teacher, as an educator, and I carried that into my real estate practice, as educating the consumer. Not selling them something, but buying on their behalf, educating them as we go along that path.
So I was quite surprised when you said you saw yourself as your role as an educator. And I was quite pleased with that, because I remember the first time we bought a house, we had no idea what we were doing. And it's just getting more and more complicated.
Absolutely. There are so many, not only is the financing more complicated, but the real estate landscape is more complicated. And, of course, federal and state disclosure laws are more complicated.
So you wrote a book, and I have to say I almost needed a wheelbarrow to bring it into the studio here with me. It's 600-plus pages long.
Correct.
Why did you write it? What made you write the book? Let's make sure that everybody has the correct title to the book. It's Escaping Condo Jail, The Keys to Navigating Risks and surviving perils of the carefree community lifestyle. I'm so glad you used that word, carefree.
In quotes.
In quotes. That, mm-hmm. Because that's what people think they're buying, is carefree living, and it's anything but carefree.
Correct. Unless you're a snowbird and you only fly down to Florida for a few months out of the year, and then you go back to your primary residence in the north, and you are just oblivious to anything that's going on. In that case, it may be truly carefree. But if you're living there year-round, and you take part in your association, you'll understand that it's really not carefree.
So why did you write the book? I mean, that's a lot of work. And being a broker is a lot of work as well.
Correct. The book was actually 4.5 years of research and writing from the East Coast to the West Coast and all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico and up to the Canadian border and beyond. Interviewing not only owners but real estate brokers and attorneys and property managers. And it started off as a nice little book about condominiums. A funny thing happened on the way to the closing. But as I dug a little deeper into the topic, it was like layers of an onion. And lo and behold, I felt a real calling and a need to write something that was not only an expose of the many, many, many problems that people don't even talk about at the cocktail parties because they're so embarrassed about what's going on behind closed doors in their home, their castle, and to also not only expose, but to educate and overcome, to give owners and board members, potential buyers and real estate brokers information that can help them solve problems and give them solutions along the way.
Are there any solutions, Sarah?
Are there any what?
Solutions.
There are solutions, yes. They're not all perfect solutions, but we have this form of housing, and I know some people are, they want to see it abolished. And that simply is not going to happen in our lifetime. There's too much money involved. And you're talking about real estate, which is fixed in nature. Of course, there are solutions that can be done at different governmental levels that would help. And the book certainly offers not only solutions of dealing with your board, but also solutions about getting involved and talking to the powers that be that can help in this situation.
Do you think that we have just too many rules and too many restrictions on property?
That's a loaded question, Shu.
Yes.
Too many rules and restrictions. Absolutely. Absolutely. And they are getting out of hand. And it's not just the rules and the restrictions, but it's the attorney fees and the fines that accompany something as minuscule as flying a 4-inch by 4-inch American flag in your flower pot.
Right.
Or planting too many lilies in your flower bed.
Or changing the numbers on your house, not, you know, 123 remains 123, but putting numbers on there that are more easily visible, especially when you're handicapped and you're not well and you want to make sure that the ambulance can get there and find your house without having to get out with a flashlight in the middle of the night and shine a bright light on every house to find it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And people have been fined for doing that. They've been harassed. They've been abused. And in your book, well, no, not in your book. Well, maybe in your book. But when we were talking, you said that in the process of
researching your book, you realized that the elderly were targeted more often.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And you have to, we would do well to understand that the primary, although the book says condo jail, it could just as easily be HOA jail. Most of these communities attract as their primary buyers not only single women who are targeted in their marketing efforts, but also over 55, people that really don't want to mow the grass and shovel the snow. And are they are the seniors experiencing more stress in their communities? Without a doubt. They are in some states I've heard them referred to as the goose that laid the golden egg. Their homes are paid for, and what happens when they get pneumonia and they don't pay their assessments? They are at risk of being foreclosed upon by their association. Losing their home that's paid for in full.
Winona Blevins comes to mind.
She's in the first chapter.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. And she managed to get a lot of publicity. In fact, she got publicity overseas as well. In Europe, they were talking about her. How can America let that happen? How can an 83-year-old woman who's been in the hospital find herself on the street?
Exactly. And what's really frightening is that Winona Blevins was one of the very, very, very few people that actually had press, had publicity, and her association returned her home. I would say that is a rare occurrence. And for her voice is representing millions.
I did interview her, and I interviewed her attorney a number of times. And what was interesting was that the association had been violating their own governing documents.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the reasons that that the attorney was able to get that overturned. And what was even better was that the settlement was not private. I mean, there was no confidentiality clause because they were told that since it was a not-for-profit, the HOA was not-for-profit, they weren't allowed to enter into a confidentiality clause, sign a confidentiality agreement. So they're using the neighbor's money, everybody's money, to buy the house back, pay the guy back, and give Winona some money. And everybody knew about that. Marianne came on and she told us. She said it's $300,000 that she got for her. Plus she got the house back.
Mm-hmm. And if I recall, the amount that she owed was around $800 and change.
But it turned out that was erroneous as well because they weren't allowed to collect that much. They were not allowed to increase the dues.
Mm-hmm. So what should have cost them less than perhaps $500 ended up costing them, what, well over $300,000.
Oh, it was $95,000 to the guy who bought it, so it was about $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. She had paid, she missed 1 year. It was an annual assessment. She missed 1 year. But when she got the bill for the second year, she thought, oh, my goodness, I forgot I was in the hospital the first time. I totally overlooked that. So she wrote a check for every penny that they asked for, and she deposited it in the box that she was supposed to do that. The treasurer took that, looked at it, and said, we've already started foreclosure procedures. We're not going to put a stop to this. So they had the money. She had paid it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think what most people don't understand when they buy into homeowners associations or condominium associations is the unchecked power that they are giving strangers.
Yeah.
Who are their neighbors. And those strangers are not only can can micromanage their lifestyle, but they're also in charge of their money.
Absolutely.
And so unfortunately, most of us have jobs and children, and we're running day to day, and we don't have time to volunteer for our boards. We should all volunteer. I mean, we should all step up, but that doesn't happen. So often the people that are attracted to those positions of power are people that don't have anything else to do, in some cases, and they're attracted to the power for the wrong reasons.
You, in the book, you say that you think everybody has to be a board member, that you have to step up and you have to serve.
You definitely should be willing and able to serve. And if you can't, then you get a note from your doctor that says, I can't. And then that's fine. But everyone that buys into an association should understand their duty, not only to go to board meetings and participate, but also to step up when your number's called. Because if you don't, it's just like jury duty. Nobody wants to go to jury duty.
Yeah, you made that comparison, and you said if people were allowed to get out of jury duty, then you'd have the same 12 people who would always be serving on the jury.
Correct, over and over and over again.
Right. Should everybody be on the board, though? I mean, does every person have the personality to be on the board and make a good board member?
Should everybody be on the board? I think everyone should be willing to serve on the board.
Okay.
That's the element. They should be willing to serve. Do you risk ending up with the village idiot? Of course.
Yeah.
But nothing could be worse than what we have in Congress right now. In some cases, I'll qualify that. And, of course, you might have the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and you might have a school teacher. Maybe that she teaches kindergarten or special ed. But these are all people in the community, and they should all be willing to step up. And in the absence, some communities don't have anyone willing to step up, and they end up going into receivership, and everyone loses their investment entirely because of apathy. And apathy, I believe, is the biggest enemy of homeowner associations and condominium associations.
You talk about apathy in the book. You also say that there are three phases. There are apathy, anarchy, and in the middle you have politics. What's the best? Would a balanced board with one from every group be a good board, do you think? Or what's the solution? You say that there are solutions. What do you think would make a good, compose a good board, a good board composition?
Well, I think you asked about the personality for it. I don't think it's necessarily about personality. I mean, as long as everyone has good communication skills, but knowing their duties. If every board member knows their duties, and those are addressed in Chapter 16, the dozen duties of the board, and those duties, regardless of which homeowner association, whether you're in the foothills of South Dakota or you're down, on the coast in Florida, those duties are the same. And, to act as a fiduciary, we all know what that is, to be transparent, to follow the governing documents and the laws. So to answer your question, I think in order to be a good board member, you need to be educated and you need to know what your duties are to the owners.
I think one of the things, there's a dictatorial mindset. I'm on the board and I'm the one who knows and I make the, and to be honest with you, CAI has said that board members are the parents and homeowners don't know what's good for them. They're the children. So you ignore the children and you go to the board members, to the parents, and you tell them what they need to do. When you have a system like that in place, you're asking for trouble. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. However, that's you know, we're dealing with more than, I would estimate, 500,000 associations across the country. I know CAI is estimating 323,000. I think the number is much, much higher than that, because many associations are not on their radar. Do I think it's a perfect form of governing in these homeowner associations? Absolutely not. But unfortunately, we have the governing documents, and unless we have a federal law that comes down the pipeline and supersedes, for example, these deed restrictions. Years ago, as you know, we used to have deed restrictions that said this property may never be transferred to a person of color. That was in the deed restriction.
Right.
Well, how did we abolish that? It was through, well, you know the answer.
Yeah.
It was through the federal government, the Civil Rights Act, the Fair Housing Act, that we cannot discriminate. So even if your deed restriction said it's okay to discriminate, the federal law superseded it.
Right.
And if we have deed restrictions that should be abolished, the only way we're ever going to be able to do that, in my opinion, is at the federal level. I know a lot of people don't agree with that, but I have worked for the federal government, so I do understand its reach.
Do you think that's something that will ever happen?
Yes, I do. Now, how it's going to be tailored and what it's going to look like remains to be seen. But I believe the problem is so severe and so unaddressed. And you're talking how many million? 60 million Americans?
Yeah.
That they're tracking. And they're probably another 30 million that they're not. And yes, we need change. We must have change in this industry.
So you decided you were going to write the book, Education is Your Passion. How do you educate potential buyers? Do sellers need to be educated? And I know you're working on putting together a seminar for realtors, which I think is an absolutely phenomenal idea. And I hope you manage to get that through.
Thank you very much. Yes, we're hoping to get a designation for realtors that specialize in this type of housing, because so many realtors, they get their real estate license and it's all related to single family, detached, without those deed restrictions. They have absolutely no education whatsoever as to condominium ownership and the, or HOA ownership, and what the rules and the regulations and the restrictions, the covenants, conditions, what those mean. And so a lot of buyers are buying blind because their realtors haven't even been educated. Their brokers haven't been educated. So the course outline that we've put together is basically a lot of the information that's in the book. And it would serve to educate real estate brokers and agents across the country on how to educate their clients when they buy, because who do buyers look to as their guide? Who's in the field with them? Who's touching the doorknob and examining the quality of the construction with them? Their home inspector, yes, but also their broker. How does this compare to other forms of ownership? Their broker should know, is this in an HOA or is it not? And oftentimes they don't even know. They don't know if it's fee simple or if it's a condominium. I have run into that repeatedly.
So I think, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Back when I was in real estate, the disclosure laws had just come in, and the buyer had to ask for the board packet, and they had to, and you weren't automatically given that stuff, and realtors were really very reluctant to give them out, and when the laws were amended, and you got a 72-hour time frame to read the governing documents, decide you didn't want to buy in an HOA, and back out of the contract without losing your down payment. When that happened, the realtors were saying, oh, it can't possibly be They just had buyer's remorse and they're out, you know. What's wrong with an HOA? They had no understanding, no real concept of what they were selling. And you're absolutely right. But we're going back 20 plus years.
Right. And because of the most recent downturn, the problems have increased tenfold. You now have at least 50% of associations that are in serious financial trouble. You have 72% that are underfunded, which means the likelihood of a new owner or a new buyer moving in, absorbing a special assessment, which is, I hope everybody listening would know what a special assessment is, but that's a direct charge that's passed through to the new owner because there isn't enough money in the reserves to cover roofs or balconies or retention ponds or roads or what have you. And we've seen those special assessments bankrupt people, especially people on fixed incomes. So you've got 72% that are underfunded. Your chances of investing in an underfunded association is so high. The only way you can protect yourself is by doing that due diligence, which is the disclosure that you're talking about.
So if you say that 72% are underfunded,
correct,
that's a sizable chunk, especially if you're talking about 500,000 associations.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge number.
And that number increased 12% over the 10-year prior period. And this was published in the Chicago Tribune in January of 2014 last year by Pam McEwen.
So chances of someone ending up in one of these is really, really, really high.
Correct.
And do they realize and do they know that they're going to get slapped with a special assessment? And if they don't pay it, they're going to lose their house?
Are they aware of that? I think it's the elephant in the room that nobody wants to acknowledge. You know, the emperor really does. He is naked.
He has no clothes. There's no clothes left. Absolutely. Naked as a jaybird running around. No, you're right. You are so right, Sarah.
And so we have these scanty, what I would call scanty state disclosures. You know, is there a special assessment coming up? Yes, no. Well, maybe they don't even know because they're taking bids right now for a $12 million special assessment. They're taking bids for it, and the bids range from $10 million to $30 million. It hasn't yet been levied, and they may not disclose that. So after you buy, 6 months later, somebody's going to knock on your door and demand $60,000 for your share of the roof that the previous owner used up its life, right? So I'll tell you something. Out of this book, I ended up hiring some computer scientists and composed an algorithm. And I applied, hired an intellectual property attorney and applied for a patent, which is currently pending. And my scientists used a technology known as optical character recognition. It was actually developed by the federal government years ago. And what we can do now, the company that was born out of this book, are you familiar with what that is?
No.
It's called Association Evaluation.
Okay, yeah, I've seen the website, and I've seen that. That's really very good.
And it actually, we can do, and for example, your attorney doesn't read all those thousands of pages. And your accountant, if ever, rarely looks at the budget to see if it makes sense. So what this technology does is once the documents are submitted, the OCR technology goes into effect, and data coordinators will check and double-check the amount in reserves, for example, the number of lawsuits, the owner-occupancy ratio, so forth and so on, to protect the consumer when they buy into these associations. And that really was birthed out of the checklists that are in the book, whether, you know, the checklists about how to buy, how to protect yourself when you buy, how to get out of a special assessment is in there, too. I actually interviewed two women that were able to fight special assessments in their buildings, not without great effort, but they were able to prevent a special assessment from being levied.
Let's go back to the 72% that's underfunded.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about education, and you talk about educating buyers. I would think that educating buyers would include the fact that there's 72%, or that a supermajority, really, of associations are underfunded, and what this means is that you very well could be slapped with a special assessment, and that means that the money you've been saving for that special vacation is going to be gone, or if you're just barely making ends meet, you could very well lose your house because the association has not done what the association is supposed to do, which is plan for future repairs, right?
Correct. Exactly. Exactly.
So we explain to people, all right, if you buy in HOA A and condo B and co-op C, you've got the potential of having special assessments. So you're talking to me and we're deciding what we want. You're trying to figure out what I want, where I want to live, and what I'm comfortable with. So you give me this information. I say, no, I don't want HOA A, condo B, or co-op C. I don't want to have to pay a special assessment. So you're limiting my search to the other, not the 72%. You're leaving those 72% associations out of the search for housing. And it would seem to me that just about any potential buyer, any consumer, would avoid those 72%. What happens to property values there?
Oh, they're dramatically lower, and associations that are plagued with a history of special assessments or an upcoming special assessment. There's no doubt that underfunded associations have a direct impact on the value of the unit or the individual owner's real estate. So often the question is, for example, the real estate broker will say, oh, look at this beautiful floor plan and look at that gorgeous view, etc. And they say, and there's $800,000 in reserves. Now that $800,000 sounds like a lot of money, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How does the buyer, or the real estate broker for that matter, know that $800,000 is grossly missing in
inadequate.
Terms of being adequate? Inadequate, thank you. In that case, and sometimes they'll say there's $800,000 in reserves, but they fail to tell you about the loan that they just took out for $3 million. So the $800,000 is plus money, or in one case, that $800,000 that they bragged about having in reserves, and the unit owner went in there, paid $250,000 for a two-bedroom, two-bath unit overlooking Lincoln Park, and then came to find out that $800,000, as we said, was grossly inadequate, and the special assessment in that case was almost $15 million for the association. So how does a consumer know? Gee, $800,000 sounds like a lot of money. But you have to look at every association individually. And there is no public place you can go to find out, except maybe in Florida, where they are now requiring budgets to be filed with the Secretary of State's office when the non-for-profits re-up every year. And I think there's some talk in Colorado about filing budgets. And so perhaps you could go in under the Freedom of Information Act to get that info. But how do you know how to analyze it?
You don't. You don't. I mean, even board members who've been given actual audits don't know how to read them. Quite often the management letter is withheld by the manager or the treasurer, which outlines all of the problems that you've got in the association, and none of the board members know that there is a management letter that you really ought to look at, because that'll tell you what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know that. People don't
know
that.
They don't. And this is where you get into the subject of reserve study and how critically important reserve studies are in terms of budgeting. You really can't budget without a reserve study. And this is a growing industry, because so many of these HOAs and the condo associations, they were formed after 1960. So they're all reaching middle age or closing in on it, and the roofs and the balconies and the elevators and those roads are needing repair now. So that's what the reserve study helps board members and owners understand. So in addition to looking at a budget, a buyer or an owner should also be asking for a copy of that reserve study and seeing if it's being followed by their board directors and their treasurer.
How would you answer the people who would tell you? I mean, I always said you need to make sure that your reserves are funded. And I got lambasted by a number of people who felt that just leaving all that money sitting around was asking for trouble, because there have been so many cases of embezzlement where board members and managers have just absconded, and management companies have absconded with millions of dollars.
There's a whole chapter on that. To Catch a Thief is the name of the chapter. But that's chapter 2 in the book. If you go to Appendix A in the back, there is a 35-point checklist how to bulletproof your association's biggest asset, the money. And I guarantee anybody that follows that checklist will not have to worry about embezzlement at all. It won't happen. It can't happen. And I wrote that because I was so frustrated. I had theft in my own. I bought my first condo when I was 19. I continue to own a condo today. And I also lived in an HOA for a period of time. I grew so frustrated with the lack of oversight, the lack of transparency, the mismanaged funds, and the theft. And in one association, the owners got together and filed 3 police reports. And the police ended up saying, well, a detective called and said, this is civil, we're not going to handle it.
Yeah.
And they may be stealing the money, but they've been given the authority to do so. Now, that quote is in the book.
Been given the authority to do so?
Correct. That's what the detective for the Chicago Police Department said. They may be stealing, because we took them proof. We took the police proof of the theft. So that experience, in part, is why the 35-point bulletproof checklist was composed. Because so many horror stories of property managers and board members running away with millions of dollars, and nobody's going to jail. Less than 2% of people that commit check fraud ever go to jail. So the only protection you have is to protect yourself.
So how do they figure they've been given authority? I mean, if you walk into a 7-Eleven and steal a packet of gum, you've committed a crime. And the
Correct.
Police are going to get all upset about, bent out of shape. They're going to chase you down, and lights and sirens and flashing, all of that stuff, even though the 7-Eleven is a private corporation. Move into HOA hell, and it's a private corporation, but all of a sudden it's a civil matter. Why don't they tell the guy in the 7-Eleven, hey, go chase that guy. It's a civil matter. You're a private corporation. Go after that person and get your packet of bubble gum back.
Exactly. And the sad fact is, as we all know what's been going on out there in Las Vegas, particularly the Vistana, the sad fact is that you really don't get any relief unless you get the federal government involved. And even then, you're not guaranteed any relief.
Yeah.
Those owners, this started in 2008, those owners have not seen one penny.
No, and they won't.
And they won't.
They won't. We're talking to Sarah Benson. She's written a phenomenal book, 600 pages. So get a nice comfortable chair, make sure your cushions are fluffed up. And the book is called Escaping Condo Jail, The Keys to Navigating Risks and Surviving Perils of the quote unquote carefree community lifestyle. Thank you. You're poking CAI in the eye for calling these things carefree living, because there's nothing carefree about them. There's a bonus in here on how to bulletproof your association with a 35-point checklist. And you've started a new business with, tell us about that. And I have been on your on the website, and I have seen it, and I think it's absolutely phenomenal. And I want to talk a little bit more about that. Give us the website for that, will you?
There are two. Yes, the easy one is myparscore.com. M-Y, and then parscore, P-A-R-S-C-O-R-E.com. Parscore stands for PAR, is Private Association Rating. Private Association Rating Score. The thought was, if a credit score can be generated on an individual without their permission, and a Dun & Bradstreet can rate a company without their permission, and Moody's and Standard & Poor's, they all are rating systems. Nobody is rating homeowner associations and condominium associations. And they need to know that there's a set of eyes and ears, a set of eyes watching them and a set of ears listening to them. Because right now, it's like the wild, wild west. There's no uniformity. There are no standards of reporting. So this company, Association Evaluation, and we also have a website, associationevaluation.com, and what the company does is in the name of the company. We evaluate homeowner and condominium associations on behalf of owners and consumers, realtors and lenders.
So what happens? I look at a house that I've fallen in love with. It's in an HOA, so I submit that HOA to you. How does this work?
Correct. You remember, back in the day, for example, we didn't have home inspections when I first started in real estate.
Right.
It's not only the wealthy. You know, the super wealthy had their inspectors. Inspectors at that time were not licensed. And as you know, an inspector only looks at that air cube, that portion of the real estate that's not associated with the actual association. And what this company does is it examines the association itself. And Shu, what was your question?
How does it work? Do people submit it? Because I noticed that you had a number of HOAs listed on the website. So are you trying to get all 500,000 associations up on there, or how?
We are doing on a case-by-case basis as the orders come in. We now have in excess of 20,000 in the system and growing every day.
Wow.
And how we get the data is on a case, again, a case-by-case basis, because no two are alike. No two associations are identical. And so we actually, the consumer sends us their documents, and we used optical character recognition to analyze and survey those documents, as well as gather information on the finances, the budget, the number against the number of units, and how many lawsuits. We use LexisNexis, for example, is there a lawsuit, but how many lawsuits are there? And what is your liability as an owner when you buy in and there are 15 lawsuits going on in an association with 100 units? You see, so all those things are taken into account, and a score is actually issued, much like a credit score or a Carfax for condos, that the consumers can then use to empower themselves before they buy.
Wow, and you're putting all this information up there for everybody? There must be a cost involved, right?
There is a cost involved. And I will tell you, this is much like a credit score, where I can't take your credit score and reveal it to the world. I need your permission to run it. You have to sign an authorization for me to run your credit score. And then I have to keep it confidential. I can't just give it out. And your credit score changes. If you didn't pay your bill and you're 30 days or 60 days or 90 days late, that's going to affect your credit score. And it's the same thing with an association. It changes day to day. So you might have no lawsuits one day, and 30 days later maybe you have 5. Or you might have a special assessment that wasn't there. Maybe you had no special assessments for 5 years, and all of a sudden a huge special assessment is coming up. Owners are jumping ship. The rental ratio goes sky high. And these things will affect your score. So it's a living, breathing organic, kind of a holistic look within the association that changes over time.
And all of this stuff is up on the website?
Correct.
And so anybody can go and look. So I'm moving to Chicago, or I'm moving to Timbuktu, and I'm thinking, all right, here's what I need. I want to make sure that I eliminate anything that's got a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I go online and I check to see if there's anything, what you have in Chicago. And they go, ooh, this doesn't look too good.
Exactly.
So realtors, stay away from that building.
Well, you know, Shu, part of this was born out of the fact that I could have two identical properties, you know, identical in every way, finishes, location, you name it. And one association is well-run, has a great, a good amount in reserves, has a great owner-occupancy ratio, and the other one is same identical construction, same neighborhood, but is poorly run, has no money in reserves, and has a low owner-occupancy ratio. Even though these buildings, they say it's all about location, 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 it's not. It's about the health of that association. It's about the score. And that unit that's in the healthy association can sell for almost double. Even though it's a few hundred feet away, it could sell for double just based on the health of the association. And when I saw that as a real estate broker, it's like consumers have to be made aware of this fact about how much the association itself affects the value of the unit and also the quality of life once you get in there.
And nobody talks about that, Sarah. Thank you so much for putting this out there, because although those of us who've been involved with this HOA stuff for years know that, nobody's done quite this kind of disclosure.
Exactly. It's all about disclosure.
And what I keep thinking is, all right, so you've got these two identical units that are 100 feet apart. One's in a well-run association, one's in a shitty association. And the price can be, the difference in price can be twice as much. But how do you answer CAI when they say, oh, an association's going to protect your property values? Oh, really? What about this association?
I think that is the biggest
baloney.
Well, yes, baloney is a good word for it.
It's clean.
They're lulled into thinking that that is a fact, and that is simply not true.
I keep wanting to make sure people understand that. You talk about education. You know, that's about the biggest nonsense that there ever was. And the other thing is, if you don't have a good, strong association, somebody might paint their door pink, and oh my God, property values are going to plummet. That's absolute nonsense. People have got you terrified of pink doors, which is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
How many of your clients come up to you and say, Sarah, I don't want in an association?
Well, unfortunately, Shu, as you know, in many areas, they don't have a choice.
Right.
And it's anything built since 1970 is in some form of an HOA for the most part, or else you have to go way out into the country. And that makes your commute time really long, and you know, you don't know if you're going to be close to any schools or hospitals. And so that's why it's so critical. If you have to dance with the devil, know what song they're going to be playing.
So let's go back. I want to talk a little bit about the seminar that you're proposing. And it's for realtors.
Correct.
And at this point, it's a proposal. But you talk about not just doing it in Chicago, but taking it across the country.
That's the goal, yes.
How long is the seminar going to be? What do you plan on talking about? How do you plan on educating people? Because I think it's a great idea. And I would love to do another show on that at some point. I just found out about it now, and I think it's still in the proposal phase.
We actually have the course outline completed. It will end up being a 2-day course, and with a designation to brokers that complete the course.
So this is an actual designation?
Correct.
So somebody can earn something by taking this class?
Exactly. And the fact that we have so many, how many realtors do we have? We have at least over 1 million throughout the United States, and they are graduating from their state-mandated education courses, and they know absolutely nothing about HOAs and condominium associations when that comprises 4 out of 5 transactions these days in urban areas.
When my daughter and her husband bought their first home, it was in an association, and I said, make sure you get the disclosure package. Mm-hmm. And she, oh, Mom, just, you know, don't be such a nuisance. I said, make sure you get it, and I want to see it. So, of course, no matter what I said, it wasn't going to make any difference because, as you well know, buying a house is an emotional purchase. Mm-hmm. She came back, and I'm looking at this stuff, and it seems that the house had sold and hadn't gone through, so they had ordered a disclosure package 6 months or 8 months earlier, and so all the information was out of date, especially the financial information. I said, you want a current budget, you want current, you know, all of that stuff needs to be current. So she went back to her agent, and her agent said, nobody's ever asked me for that. What difference does it make?
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Well, I'll tell you, for years, I know we don't have a lot of time left. I was a pioneer in the buyer representation movement back when all real estate agents used to represent the seller and only the seller.
Yep.
And I pioneered, I actually worked with Ralph Nader to get consumer representation so buyers could have their own brokers representing them in their transactions. And now every state in the country acknowledges buyer agency as a form of practicing real estate. Now, having said that, whenever I had a client that was buying in an association-governed community, I would always write into that little paragraph that says, oh, you're supposed to get the bylaws and the declaration and the budget and so forth, and I would put, and 12 months or 24 months of the most recent board minutes. And I didn't know a single other broker that would put that language in there. But why did I do it? Because it was only in the board minutes that you could find out about an upcoming special assessment that they were taking those bids for, but was not yet levied. And that's how I protected my client. So this book is kind of like the culmination of 30 years of working in this industry and wanting to not only expose the problems, but to come up to educate the consumers and homeowners, and also to propose some solutions to those problems.
Going back to the buyer broker, I remember when I first got into real estate, I argued with my broker, and I said, I don't know the seller. How can I possibly work for the seller? Seller's paying your commission. Well, not until my buyer buys that house is the seller paying it, and it's coming out of the purchaser's money, so don't give me that baloney. So I was really pleased to see the buyer representation come along, because the other one just made no sense whatsoever.
Exactly. You are truly my sister when you said that. The buyer does fund that deal. The buyer's the one paying those commissions.
Absolutely. I mean, and we're going back 25 years when I was in real estate, back in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm. That's when it was a very hot potato.
Yeah,
but we did get laws changed in every state throughout the country.
Well, I just closed down real estate company, so I'm glad you stuck around, Sarah, and made that change.
Well, thank you, Sue.
We've got about a minute left. What one thing do you want people to take away from this interview?
That the American dream is achievable. But you have to do your homework before you put your first penny into that transaction.
Put your money where your mouth is, huh?
Correct.
I mean, put it simply.
Do your research. Do your research. Do your homework and get answers. Demand answers.
You need a clone like Sarah if you're not buying in Chicago, because she's going to take care of you. I've had a number of realtors come up to me and say, "Shu, I sold a house and now the association's going after my client. What do I tell them?" And say, "You're screwed." Tell them you're screwed. I mean, basically, at that point, what do you tell them?
It doesn't happen to my clients. Never has.
You're a good gal. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed talking to you. I hope you'll come back again.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a true honor and a pleasure to visit with you this afternoon. Thank you so much, Shu, for all of your work that you do on behalf of consumers. It's just so admirable.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.